And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 739. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, we head to Baltimore, talking Baltimore Orioles baseball, where they have been a fun young team now, making postseasons, doing all kinds of fun stuff over there that gets the fan base pretty excited about things. And when it comes to fantasy and everything else, they are a very viable ball club. So to help me break this all down is the the lead betting analyst is what I'm going to call him. There's probably a different name for it over there at FTN Fantasy. Our buddies with Vlad Sedler and company over there. You can find them on Twitter at MLB Dream. Dream, how we doing, my friend?
Pretty good, Bubba, man. Thanks for having me on again this year.
Yep. Looking forward to talking some O's with you. Before we get at it, why don't you let everybody know what you got going on over there at FTN Fantasy? As we kind of talked before the show, things are ramping up.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Vlad already has the fantasy baseball package up and running, bunch of great guest writers and some really great articles and data. We do a couple in-house stats that we came up with last year, like the filth. We posted about that yesterday. You should definitely check it out. It's pretty cool. Pretty heavy on the data side. Me personally, spring training starts on Thursday. So I'll have my daily pitcher list where you'll be able to see every single pitcher that's scheduled to go that day. If you're playing DFS, that helps as well. So getting ready to bet some spring training and just enjoy baseball, man. It's been a long off season.
It has been a very long off season. I saw your tweet, I think on Monday, that y'all quad boxes start on Thursday, which is great because like, I love the spring training to kind of see how guys are ramping up and doing things. Dream's out there literally betting on spring training and, like, living the dream. Like, it is his opening day almost. So that's how I got to know him, like, a long time ago on Twitter. Is he's busting it out there in spring training, which helped me get ready for other factors. So, really, really good stuff over there. And we were talking off air about some season-long props. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff out there. So go check out FTN Fantasy and what Dream's got cooking over there. All right, let's talk some O's. Before we talk players here, I ask every guest, what were your thoughts on how 2024 went for the Baltimore Orioles? You're on mute. Or your cat unhooked it.
I don't know what happened there. I didn't press anything, so it must have been the cat.
Yeah,
you can't really be disappointed, I guess. I've been watching them. They were horrible for so long that even them being, if you don't want to call them a contender, like close to a contender is really exciting for me. It'd be nice if they won a playoff game. I think they've lost about their last like six or seven or something like that. But overall, it was a good year. Didn't see, I guess, so much from Mayo, and it was frustrating to see Grayson go down towards the end of the year, right when I feel like he was, pretty much in the middle of a breakout. But overall, I was happy with the season.
Yeah, no, it's getting there. It's like they're so close, and that division keeps getting tougher and tougher. You know, the Yankees do Yankee things. Red Sox, we'll see if they're still doing Red Sox things as that drama continues to unfold. Jays tried to make some moves this year, so we'll see if that does things. And the Rays are always a pain in the butt when it comes down to it. Let's talk some players here, though. Let's talk Gunnar Henderson. This is a guy that broke out last year in his second season, really turned things on. 32 homers, 21 steals, hit .281. Basically, this time last year we're saying Adley Rutschman is the face of the team. Maybe that's still the case, but Gunnar Henderson is making a plea to be the face of the team. ADP's coming around in 5 and OCs lately. What are you thinking for Gunnar? Is there another level to this, like a Bobby Witt expansion, or is this who he is, which is still very good?
No, I think there is another level to him, and I think you're right. I think he is the face of the Orioles right now, especially what we saw with Adley, whether it was injury-related last year, but the second half collapse and kind of the power kind of evaporating. Gunnar's a legitimate MVP candidate, and he's the team will go as far as he takes them at the top of the lineup. You can definitely pencil him in for 30-plus home runs, some steals, and I do think there's another level where he could potentially get up there with, Bobby Witt and be the arguably the best shortstop in baseball.
Yeah, no, I was so torn on him last year when it comes to, the fantasy side of it. Didn't know what to do with him. Seeing him now, seeing him go early, he goes, he's like one of the top shortstops off the board, like him and Ellie going right there. I prefer Gunner's overall stability to Ellie De La Cruz. But, Gunnar, if he takes another step, that's going to be very, very, very impressive. Adley Rutschman took a little step back last year, obviously dealt with some injuries kind of and kept playing through them. Hit .250 after hitting .277 the year before, 19 home runs, coming in with an ADP of around 65. How are we feeling on Adley? Because you know, everyone thought he's like the outside of William was one of the top catchers in the game. Kind of took a step back last year, but maybe it was injuries, maybe it wasn't. You'd probably heard more about it in Baltimore.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really know what to make of Adley and what to expect from him this year. There was a stat that was getting thrown around where that he got hit on the hand, and his numbers after that incident, pretty much with the beginning of him dropping. Like, he's what projected for around 20 home runs again. Yep. I get that he's like one of the guys that might have like a higher floor, does a great job, you know, higher floor offensively, and just does a great job carrying the staff. He might not be like the fantasy slugger or superstar that, you know, Orioles fans and fantasy guys have hope for. It's a little depressing, I'll be honest. I'm not saying that like he's definitely not going to hit more than 20, but you know, O's fans went through it with Weeters, thinking that he was the next Mauer with power. And now it's kind of sad seeing Adley fizzle out a little bit. I honestly don't know. I'm hoping that it's mostly injury related and him getting hit on the hand last year, and that we see him kind of just smacking, you know, line drives all across the field again.
Yeah, that's a great comp with the Weeters, because when Weeters came out, switch hitter, actually closed games at Georgia Tech, like all these things with Weeters, supposed to be the next, and he was still a very good real life catcher, like very good, just never hit the, you know, the Mauer comps there. And Adley feels like he might be going the same range, and that's why it's, and I'm talking as a Giants fan now, it's so hard to have a prospect catcher. Like Buster worked out, but then we've had Bailey, we had, I don't think it's going to be there, Bart, who obviously went to Pittsburgh. Like, there's so many teams will have these catchers, and not as many pan out as you would think, when at least in the offensive side, because it's just a grind to catch. And Weeters plays, or not Weeters, Adley plays nearly every single day. So that makes it very, very tricky. Very good real-life player, I think, for like fantasy and whatnot. Maybe what we saw last year is more what to expect, which is still very good, but he's not going to be that elite guy that I mean, many thought.
I think you're right. You look at the way that he handles the pitching staff, because like they say, you know, the catchers, at least offensively, might take a little bit longer to come around. But he does an incredible job with the pitchers. You see like the way that he embraces every guy at the end of the games. Like, these guys love him and love what he provides back there.
Yep. So he'll be a staple for this team forever, like in that regard. And that's what you want from your catcher, honestly. Like, you have eight other guys in the lineup. Get it done. Like, let this guy control the rotation. And yeah, again, that's just more for the listeners. Like, it's tough to have a prospect catcher meet those wishes, basically. It's just not easy. Tyler O'Neill, new member of the Baltimore Orioles. I wrote about him for something lately. It's really interesting looking at his Fangraphs page, because we know Tyler's always hurt. He's played over 100 games twice, and both those years it's over 30 home runs, because we know he's jacked and he's going to drop bombs whenever he's on the field. It's just, when's he on the field? What are we feeling this year when it comes to Tyler O'Neill? Because it's just the what if question all over again.
Man, he's a guy that I've always loved and haven't been able to quit pretty much ever. And I did hear he made some comments talking about how that the Orioles front office, the fact that they're moving the fence in, had a big, you know, is what drew him to the Orioles, mostly kind of put it over the top. It's hard not to pencil in for those 30 bombs, right? Like, we're talking about a little bit like Tatis, like they're going to get there if they just play like the 120 games, 130 games. I also heard that I don't think all the projection systems have adjusted their numbers yet for the Orioles fence moving in. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think Steamer has. I'm not sure if the bat has. I'm forgetting, but I think there's only one system that had already adjusted. So I'd be curious to see where they end up moving these home runs up for guys like Mountcastle and O'Neill. But like, as an O's fans, I know we lost Santander, and I think he's supposed to be the guy that brings some power to that lineup for them.
Yeah, Santander would have been. Yeah, if healthy though, O'Neill is a great spot filling for Santander. Just gotta stay on the darn field, that's for darn sure. Colton Cowser, talk about a guy that came out the doors and just was taking the world by storm. There's people dressed up as cows all over the stadium. It was a lot. It was pretty cool, honestly. Finished 24 homers, 9 steals, hit 242. He definitely hit that rookie wall where teams made adjustments to him. He had to adjust back. How are we feeling on the sophomore season here with Colton Cowser?
Man, the milkman, right? I love it. I think he has a real high ceiling. He's someone that I really – Orioles fans have kind of tried to figure out for a while who's going to be better, him or Heston, when they both came up, and the fan base was kind of split. I think I love the upside for both guys. Cowser, I thought for a while that he was looking like he was going to win Rookie of the Year. I know Hill ended up coming out with it. I think this is one of the guys that has probably one of some of the higher upside on the Orioles. And I think when a lot of people give them shit for their offseason, they don't necessarily think about the next level that guys like Cowser or even Holiday or even Westberg. Like we mentioned, I know we haven't talked about it yet, but Mountcastle with the fence moving in.
Yeah, it's going to be like these right-handed bats. It's should on paper turn into a lot of improvements across the board in a big way. And like you mentioned, Jordan Westbrook, that's who we got next. And I think this is a big one because he was actually showcasing some interesting power. He finished with 18 homers, but before he got hurt, he was looking like he's going to be like a 22, 25 home run guy, maybe 10 steals. He hit 264, like turning into a real good ball player in his first full run with the team. They already came out in spring saying he's going to play strictly third base, which makes sense with the roster build, but they had to say it because that's the world we live in. And he's moving up draft boards and fantasies as high as like 75 right now. People are loving Jordan Westbrook. Should we be in love with Jordan Westbrook?
Yes, he's one of the most consistent Orioles. You can see him in the guy. He's not like necessarily trying to hit home runs. He's just trying to barrel up the ball, and dude, it just jumps off his bat. If you look back at the Orioles' offensive struggles last year, part of it was Adley, but it also was right when Westbrook got hurt. He's one of the most consistent guys that's just barreling up the ball and, you know, hitting it out in the gaps and over the wall. He's one of the quieter guys on the team, and I know with all these other prospects and all these bigger names, he might get kind of, you know, glossed over at times, but I think he's like one of their better hitters. I know Ross Resource has him, what, like the seventh or eighth hole right now? Like, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets bumped up at some point in the year.
Yeah, and I want to actually, that's a great point. I want to ask you when we're done talking about the hitters here, I want to kind of get your idea on the lineup, because with this group of talent, I can see a lot of versions, honestly, of this lineup and how you want to pencil it in. But I agree, like the Westbrook one and Ross Resource, I say it all the time and many do, is it's not the end-all be-all. It's a place to start at. Like Westbrook feels, just based on his hit tool, his OBP, he needs to be higher up in the order. But it's always the question, who moves? That's the thing. It's like I look at the Rangers. They have Jake Berger hitting eighth. Like, I'm sorry, you do not hit Jake Berger eighth if you want to enjoy what he can bring to the table. Just little things like that. All right, this player, I have zero clue what to do with in fantasy. Like Gunnar Henderson, I've always had like a little idea, but I've been tepid. Jackson Holliday, I do not know what to expect. I know the hype train is through the roof. I know we've seen the skills in the minor leagues that are just, this guy's the next best thing. He hit a massive learning curve at the big league level last year, which is expected from a 20-year-old. Not going to like put him down for that. But can he bounce back enough? Now, his ADP is 220, so he's not costing you a lot, which is great. But what do we expect from Jackson Holliday? Because when I see him, I feel like we're still a couple years away, maybe.
Maybe we are a couple years away from actually him hitting that, like, gunner level, because he is so young. I think this is kind of where, like, my homerism might come out a little bit. Like, I'm, you know, like you said, I bet a lot, so I'm not an Orioles homer. I know you've seen the clip, the side-by-side of him and Ohtani at the end of last year and the, like, toe taps. So they did switch something up, and he was closer to, like, I want to say, like, a WRC plus of, like, 90 in the second half or maybe the last couple months. So he wasn't as bad as he was early on. If you watched him his first handful of games in his first stint, like, it was obvious what they're going to do. It's like, okay, like, here comes a couple high fastballs and something that's, like, running away from him, and he's just going to chase. It was pretty much like an automatic strikeout. I do think he was kind of a different guy during his recall. I don't know if we're going to see him take that next step just because he's so young. But, I mean, man, you look at, like, even, like, pictures of him. Like, last year, at the start of last year, and then when they drafted him, he looked like a little kid. Like, I think he's finally can drink alcohol legally.
It's crazy.
But, like, as far as, like, knowing when the actual, like, breakout comes, that's a real tough question.
Yeah, that's why I've kind of just been off of him, I think, because I don't know. Like, if I miss out, I miss out. But I believe Sunday is going to be great. And it also just kind of enhances what Jackson Churio did at 20 years old last year. It's just insane. Because, like, that's why I kind of prefaced it. I'm like, Jackson Holliday, I think, is still going to be great. It's just, he's so darn young. Like, we got to figure this out. And maybe batting him eighth for a full season or ninth is not a bad thing to do, all things considered.
And just like Trey, you don't really know what's going to, like, what they're going to learn or change with their mechanics. It's just going to make it click for them. And, like, just all of a sudden, they'll be that guy.
Yep. It's all it takes with these young players, because the talent is definitely there. Just figuring it out's the other question. Cedric Mullins, it's a yearly debate. It's like, okay, how many games will Cedric Mullins play? He played like 159, 156, then went to 116 kind of in a platoon. Back to 147 last year when you saw 1832 again. Like, we know if he plays a lot, he's 2020. We've seen 30-30. There's a lot to like with Ced. The question is, will he play? Because, you know, if he does play a lot, his current ADP of 213 is awesome. But what do you think? And looking at this roster, because I know we're going to talk about like the Heston Kjerstad and some other things there. There's a lot of moving parts in Baltimore, which is a good thing from real life, a pain in the butt for us.
Yeah, the thing that kind of has me unsure is the Ramon Laureano signing.
Yes.
Not to get too off topic here, but like, I probably still think that there's a chance that they could make a trade and, you know, for a guy like Cease and kind of bolster that rotation. And Laureano would make a lot more sense if they traded Kerstad, or I don't know if San Diego would be interested in a guy like Mullins, but it's kind of hard to figure out exactly how much playing time they're going to get. Like before the Laureano signing, I'd say, yeah, he's going to be playing every day. They don't really have anyone else in center field. I don't think it'll be a platoon with Laureano. Maybe like they'll use him more as like a defensive substitution late in the games for O'Neill or even or Heston. But like, it's kind of hard to figure out because I think they have too many outfielders right now. Like, they kind of need to make a trade. I don't know if that's me still being kind of a homer and hoping that they get a legit number one to replace Burns. But it's really hard to figure out the outfield playing time specifically for Mullins with our current roster.
Yeah, that's been my dilemma in drafts, and I'm one of those degenerates that starts drafting in October. So I've been playing this game in my head, and then I see Tyler O'Neill sign. Oh, and there's Ramon Laureano, who actually was decent with the Braves to finish last year. So it's not like you can just push him to the side like conversation. I do think they should, and I kind of feel like they will trade for a Cease or someone like that. Like they're saying, the Padres are saying now that they signed Pivetta, they won't trade Cease. Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. They're crying poor out there in San Diego. So if they can get a prospect or two, they'll do that, and it makes a ton of sense for the O's, like you mentioned. So a lot can change in the next, you know, maybe 24 hours for all we know, let alone a few days, which makes things always interesting right now. You mentioned him a few times. We talked about him off air, and it's Ryan Mountcastle. And this is a guy that we've seen 33 homers, then 22 homers. And that was like the year when the walls changed. That's like a clear evidence of what took place there. Then we saw some injuries, drop them to 18 and 13 the last 2 years, but one thing we've seen is the power is still pretty darn legit. And it looks like he might not have a platoon partner unless Ryan O'Hearn platoons with him at first base. So it's kind of his to run with. How are we feeling on Mountcastle this year?
Yeah, like I don't know if they'll do a little bit of platoon with O'Hearn in playing some first base and getting Heston at DH. I don't really know how that's going to work. But yeah, I don't think anybody was hurt more. Maybe Mancini was, but I think Mountcastle lost the most home runs to that wall. And yeah, he battled some injuries last year. I think he also had vertigo, if I'm not mistaken, which just sounds like one of the worst things to deal with. I'm kind of high on him. I think that we're going to get back to like him being a pretty powerful righty. We talked about this off air. I saw a little discussion between one of Ryan's posts, and people were kind of citing his low pull percentage. And I think the reality is him and both Austin Hayes, when he was in Baltimore, changed their approach. It was pretty obvious to see how many times they would barrel the ball up and it barely would make the warning track over there in left field. Like it would just been dumb for him to continue with his 34-35% pull percentage and just constantly flying out. He's a guy that I think should do really well this year given the wall moving in.
And that's a great point you mentioned, because a lot of us were crediting the home run that collapsed just to the wall, but then also obviously you said these guys made approach changes. They're our professionals. That makes sense along the line there. And I don't want to go on an Austin Hayes diatribe, but like I've always been a believer in Austin Hayes, and people did point at his stats the last couple of years, and maybe there's a big reason, like you just said, of why things changed a little bit. Now he's in Cincinnati, and that could be a nice landing spot as well. But yeah, I like the Mountcastle bounce back, I guess you could say. ADP is 230, so it's definitely affordable at the same time. I'm just going to kind of group these guys together, and you can talk about what you wish here. Like, so you mentioned Ramon Laureano, who's likely to platoon. There's Heston Kjerstad, who something should play every day. The Orioles might not have a spot for him, is the question. And then you have Ryan O'Hearn, who might platoon at DH. There's like a lot of moving parts. They already said Gary Sanchez is going to platoon at DH with Ryan O'Hearn. They want to get him his bat in the lineup, which I surprised me a little bit, I guess. But where are we feeling on some of these bench guys? Because they, with the way the Orioles play, they will have prominent roles from time to time.
I feel like they gave Adley a decent amount of time off. Now, I don't know if it was just because the injury in the second half, but we should probably see a decent amount of Sanchez. Kerstad should be playing every day, man. Like, it's pretty much that simple. The guy's, like, 26 now. Yeah. I know he had some health issues that were non-baseball related, but I think he has – we talked about Kowser. I think his upside is right up there with Kowser. And if they don't want to give this guy everyday opportunities, then, like, let's trade him for something that they actually need, like a top-end pitcher. But I think that he will get a bunch of outfield work. Like, I think it's a little difficult to call him, like, the everyday right fielder at this point, but I mean, I think he should be pretty close to it. And then another thing with the infield, like you mentioned, Westbrook at third, they love Ramon Urias's glove. Like it's Hyde, especially, it's hard for Hyde to sit him for too long. So if you get someone that's cold, even if that's a Holiday or even Mountcastle, like expect Urias to see a bunch of time because they absolutely love his glove. And at the very least, he'll be a defensive substitution. So it's not that much, like not that important on the fantasy side. But yeah, they just have too many outfielders right now for the spots that they have. So it really would just make sense. And that's what makes this so tough, man. Spring training starts in a day and a half, and like there's still a bunch of free agents that could make a significant, like, improve a bunch of teams. So it's like we're trying to figure out the answers with kind of some incomplete information.
Yeah, and that's why, like, when you have so many awesome prospects, which the O's have had for like the last 3 years or so, you either got to play them or trade them. Like, you just can't play the game anymore. And like the fact, I didn't even realize that until you said it. I looked, I'm like, Jesus, Kirsten, it's 26. It's like, you either need to play him over Ryan O'Hearn and see what you got. Like, Ryan O'Hearn, we know who he is, and he's a formidable big league, like, not going to crush it for you, not going to kill you type guy. I have his moments where you don't know what Kirsch is. You either trade him, it's like the old shit or get off the pot theory. Like, you got to figure it out right now. And I'm with you on that. I can see how that can get tough. And you mentioned Urias, which, yeah, he always gets playing time when someone gets hurt. He's like the first man up. And then I wrote about it yesterday on my news. Like Jorge Mateo, he's out because of the nasty injury at the end of last year. But they're expecting, like, after a month of the season, he'll be back. And he can't really get sent around the minors. So, like, if Holiday does get off to a slow start, there is a realistic world where he is back in AAA while Mateo and Urias play second base potentially.
And, dude, Mateo last year fooled me for the first, like, couple months. Like, obviously, like, his contact rate was up. His swing and miss was down, especially, I think, in the zone as well. And we saw some legit pop from him. And he was a top prospect, I think, with the Yankees and the Padres. His speed is obviously legit. He also might be a guy that, like, if you can pick up a month from now or a month into the season, like, you might, at the very least, you'll get some steals. I like Mateo. I hated him for quite some time just because he had so much swing and miss, and he was, like, pretty much an automatic out. But as someone that not – as long as he doesn't play every day, I think he adds some good value to the club.
Yeah, I'm with you. If he just gets quasi-regular at-bats, he steals so many bases. And that is true, especially on a team like the O's that has so much power in the middle of that order. He gets to get on base and set the table and see where it goes. Exactly. All right. Let's head to the mound here where, yes, losing Corbin Burns, they could definitely – like, they have a good rotation. They need that ace, like you mentioned. And they picked up Zach Eflin at the trade deadline last year. Very solid guy, probably better to be a two or a three in a rotation. But solid nonetheless. And ADP is 191, so it doesn't cost a lot. What are we thinking with Eflin? Because you saw a little bit of him last year playing for the O's.
Dude, I've always been a big Eflin guy in the Phillies and the Rays. I know that he's had knee injuries, but I think he's a perfect fit for him. We actually saw them increase his swinging strike percentage when he got to Baltimore and up the strikeouts a little bit, which I was a little surprised about because I figured that he would pitch a little bit deeper into games given what we needed and the rest of our staff. He's a free agent at the end of this year, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes. Let me check.
If that's the case, I mean, I really don't see – yeah, he's a free agent at the end of this year. Yeah. He's a guy that they should make go out, like, make him go six innings pretty much every time. I don't know if that we'll see a little dip in his strikeouts then. But like you said, he's probably better off being a two or a three. But given the rest of the rotation, like, they should be throwing him out there for about six innings. And I think 2 years ago, I might have bet on him being the Cy Young winner or something like crazy, like 150-1. He might have gotten like one second place vote or something like that. But this guy, I think, is kind of underappreciated both in fantasy and real life. Again, he'd be like perfect number two on the staff. I'd feel a lot better with like a Burns type. But dude, I think Eflin is great. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he's a phenomenal pitcher. It's just he's not an ace of a staff. So it's like he's very good. And like you mentioned, we'll get to the rest of this rotation. They need him to go six plus out there to like save your bullpen and whatnot. And that starts off with Grayson Rodriguez, who we know the talent is undeniable with Grayson. He has 116 innings last year, 122 the year before. It's like, can we put it together for a full season? That's the question. Fantasy drafters believe they can. He's got an ADP of 102, so they love him. But where are you on Grayson? Because I can't draft him right now. At that ADP, I need to see a season of health. Like I said, I don't deny the talent. I just need to see it. That's like your second or third fantasy pitcher, and I don't feel great about that.
Yeah, that might be a little tough to take him there. But I think he could be a number two as well, kind of the same mold as Eflin, just more strikeouts. I think he definitely won't be pitching as deep into games as Eflin, and you kind of hope to see more strikeouts coming, especially with the slider. I don't know if we're really totally going to get that. He might, again, be a guy that's better in real life than, at least for fantasy purposes, if you're banking on him to being your number two pitcher. I'm pretty high on him as well. Like, I think he has ace potential. I think he could, you know, kind of carry the staff. Again, I just don't know if you want to bank on that in fantasy.
Yeah, for sure. Charlie Morton, it's a guy that I've always loved. Like, he's almost your innings eater in a weird way. My joke with Charlie for the last few years, it's like, okay, you're going to get 5 to 6 innings. He's going to allow 3 to 4 runs and get you about a strikeout an inning. That's who Charlie Morton is, which is not elite, but it's actually not going to crush you more often than not. He just keeps going out there, putting up 150 innings every year. What's your thoughts on Charlie? Because he's basically undrafted in 12-team leagues.
He's undrafted. I mean,
his ADP is like 360, so that's like the last pick in a 12-team league. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think he'd have value, some fantasy value, right? If he's healthy, they're going to keep throwing him out there, and he's definitely going to go, like you said, like 5 or 6. They're not going to limit him at his age. Yeah. Like, if he can throw, I also kind of don't like how much crap the Orioles got for this signing. Like,
oh, I loved it. I would take him over Verlander on the Giants right now.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. Like, and actually, I think I tweeted that, and it was kind of a little closer than what I thought in how many people would take Verlander. Also, like, you think about how I know this isn't necessarily fantasy or betting, but how young the team is. They need a guy that's like in his like a veteran.
100%.
And I'm pretty sure the clubhouse is going to absolutely love him. They love Kyle Gibson, and this is another dude that like loves to hunt, and it's just like a baseball lifer that I know the young guys will really be drawn to. I love Charlie Morton since his days, even with the Astros, and when he just decided to, hey, I'm just going to throw harder, and now I'm throwing like 95 plus. So I think he's solid, and I think he's like pretty good value at the end of your draft.
Yeah, no, I love him. I always take chances of him in fantasy. Like, if some reason he's just kind of like that redheaded stepchild, people forget about him, don't like him. He's old. A lot of people don't like old players. That's just what they do. I have no problem with him. Like, he's, you know what you're going to get. I like that. And you make a great point. I try to talk about that on some of my shows, is like the real life aspect of the game of baseball, having that veteran in the clubhouse. Like, that's the only reason I'm fine with Verlander on the Giants, like, because there's already videos coming out of him working with Birdsong in the bullpen at spring. Like, okay, that stuff is why I do like the deal. I'd rather him not pick up the ball every fifth day, like, just hire him as a coach. Cool. But like, so Charlie could have that same impact for sure. Sitting there right now in spring, you know, in the bullpen sessions, he's probably making jokes, but also teaching these, like, he's probably hanging out with Grayson or something, who knows, and doing little things like that. So I'm with you there. Dean Kramer's another guy that's just like never dominant, but very serviceable. He's like a quality starts guy is the best way I can put him. And he's perfect as a fourth or fifth in this rotation. Like, he fits what this team needs beautifully, because he'll go out there as long as he's healthy and give you the 5 to 6 and do his thing. What's your thoughts on Dean Kramer?
I've never really been a big Dean guy, but I mean, you pretty much nailed it, right? Like, we're looking at a league average guy that'll be the back end of the bullpen. Like, nothing crazy in terms of strikeouts or not going to blow you away with his stuff. But he pitched really well last year. I was impressed with him. I definitely gotten some arguments with people thinking that, you know, he's a lot better than his number shows, because I think he had a pretty large difference for a bit between like his ERA, his FIP, and Sierra. He was kind of pitching over his head. I think he had like something like 7 or 9 consecutive starts. I don't know if they were all quality starts, but you know, he was big for them when they really needed it. Again, I think he's a perfect guy back in rotation, but I'd also love to see you package him in like Heston, send him over to San Diego and get Cease. Like, the way this team is built, like, they need to do a deal like they did for Burns, yes, with DJ, with Hall, and God, I'm blanking on.
I don't remember who it is now.
He played second base for the Brewers last
year. Oh, Joey Ortiz.
Ortiz, like, yes, right? Ortiz showed some flashes too, and showed some nice pop as well. Like, probably not as good as Westberg. But like, they need to make a similar type deal. And I would love to see Kramer going to San Diego.
Yeah. Kjerstad and Kramer for Cease, people might argue, but that's actually a pretty legit trade. Like, all things considered, that's pretty reasonable in the grand scheme of things. Like, if you believe in Kjerstad's talents, like, that's a pretty fair deal. Last one I got here on the starting rotation side, I think, is Tomoyuki Sugano coming over from Japan. This is one that, Ryan and I had the Baseball HQ writer on that does the international stuff, and he thinks just for this season alone, Sagano's actually going to be better than Sasaki because Sagano's a veteran that's been through it. Now, Sasaki might have the better strikeout upside, but there's concerns about, you know, other things with Sasaki. So that's why he thought that. And he's followed the Asian circuit for a long time, so I'll listen to what he has to say. What are your thoughts on Sagano? Because I have no grasp on what to do with these foreign players when they come over.
Bro, I mean, I'm not going to bullshit you. I have no clue.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I know they recently made, you know, one of my favorite all-time Orioles, Adam Jones, some sort of consultant or something with a team.
And he did play in Japan for a while. That's right.
Exactly. So he was like, you know, looking at this guy, I'm surprised it took him until, what, age 35 to come over here. Yep. I don't know, man. Like, I guess a solid back end of the guy. Like, we're just kind of guessing and talking, you know, repeating kind of things that we hear. But he seems like a league average, maybe, is kind of what they're hoping for out of the fifth spot. Which is fine, again, for the way this team is built. They're only gave him a one-year deal. And that's kind of another thing that's kind of annoyed me or bothered me throughout this offseason. It's like people are talking like this window, Orioles window, is like shutting or closing soon. It's like the guy that made all these draft picks is going to continue drafting like some of the best players that, and they do a good job of getting the best out of, I think, pitchers and guys on the hitting side. And we saw it with one of my favorite Orioles last year was Albert Suarez. I know it's kind of a joke, but he was out of the league for like 4 years. They increased his velocity from like 91. I think he was touching 96 at times. Like, I don't know how they did that. And he's an awesome guy to root for. I'm hoping that Sagano will be kind of the same thing here.
Yeah, Albert Suarez is kind of like the sixth man right now. He's the long reliever, but we know he'll get plenty of starts just based on the way things work, especially if they don't get another pitcher. He's one of my most rostered players in 50-round drafts right now. Like, he's, because he goes around like pick 600. So I've just been drafting him everywhere. Like, just give me 15 to 20 starts and I'll use you throughout the season. It's perfect. Yeah, I like Suarez. I get a lot of flack, sarcastic flack for that when I do it, because like, oh yeah, he's boring, this and that. I'm like, look at him. He's actually like doing good stuff out there. Like, look at him.
He's not bad, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy that, like, when he's on the mound, the first thing I do in the morning is I check his strikeout prop. And, like, if it's 2.5, like, I'm blindly betting it, essentially. Yeah. But he's a solid, again, he's probably a better real-life pitcher than fantasy. But I'm curious, if he does go to the bullpen, I'm curious how high he could actually get that velocity.
That's true.
So he's a guy that I like, a great guy for this team. And honestly, you could do a lot worse on finding a guy, a swing guy or a guy to pitch multiple innings out of the bullpen.
Yep, I like that a lot. All right, let's talk bullpen, though, because this is where things are getting interesting the more I read reports these days. So big Felix Bautista, one of the best closers in baseball, obviously had his injury. He was ramping up towards the end of the season, like he was ready to go in the postseason. They said, nah, let's not do it. So I'm thinking, okay, it means he's ready to go. No problem. Now he throws his first bullpen on Monday, and they're saying he's on track, barring any setbacks, to be ready for opening day. What are we doing with his bullpen right now?
So I didn't think there was a chance we'd see him at the end of last year. That was kind of like, let's get some good vibes flowing and some good news out on Bautista. I think they'll be like extremely careful with him. Like, I'm not expecting to see him pitch on like back-to-back days. They might even like limit his use, especially early on. It seems like he's fully like healthy. They just kind of don't want to just like let it rip and run, given how long the season is. And man, I was actually looking at this bullpen before we talked. I do think the Phillies kind of hosed them on those deals that they made last year. I don't really know what to expect out of Sir Anthony. I do think that Kittredge, looking at his numbers and like, I think what makes it obvious what his role will be is how much money they gave him, when it was like 10 or 12 million or something like that. Like, I hated the Craig Kimbrel signing. Like, from the day that they signed, it's like, dude, if this is going to be your free agent signing, like, put that money somewhere else. Like, we don't need him. But the reason why I bring him up is, like, you look at all the chances they gave him because of, like, what he's making on the team, and then that they finally released him. But I assume that Kittredge will get a lot of the eighth inning opportunities and probably a lot of some of the save opportunities until they're willing to pitch Bautista on back-to-back days.
Yeah, and I agree. That's where I was going to go with that, and you nailed it for where my brain's at. It's like, I think Sir Anthony was very serviceable last year, filled in admirably. He's better for the seventh and eighth inning role, I think. Like, he could jump in if needed. The signing of Kittredge was huge for me. That did two things. It signaled that, yes, Bautista may not be ready to rock and roll, like full go, which that worked too. And Kittredge has been really nasty in the back end of games. So if you need a guy to fill in and maybe get you 10 saves this year, like, that ain't going to crush you on a team that should win probably 85, 90 games, maybe more. So like it's a real like I in theory they're better than that, but the division is going to eat each other. So I guess why I say 85 to 90.
Dude, I think that's perfect, and like that's why like I just nodded along because I do think that overall I think that the Orioles, Yankees, and Red Sox even are a lot closer than people think. Yep. And again, like we talked about, how moves can still be made. Like if the Orioles do trade for, it doesn't even necessarily have to be an ace, but another legitimate two, like you get to bump some guys down, and that will definitely change our outlook. But I do think that those three teams in the East are a lot closer than they were last year. And then just quickly, while we're still talking about pitchers, I think Bradish, like I think what he's expected to come back maybe in the second half of last year, he was one of my favorite guys to bet on in the strikeout market, especially when he started throwing his curveball and slider more. Like he was just racking up the case. So he's a guy that like I would look at that when he's close to coming back, you could probably want to pick him up or maybe stash him on your IL. And he's a guy that I'll probably be backing fairly often in the strikeout market.
I'm glad you mentioned him because I was looking at him. He reports came out he was starting to throw on flat ground already, which is good because he had the TJ surgery. I think it was the brace procedure. So that's usually a 9 to 12 month instead of 12 to 16 type deal in June. So in theory, like you said, like all-star break. And so you get him for a good chunk of the back end. I love Bradish. I was picking him up last year. I was super bummed when he got hurt, not from just fantasy purposes because I like him for that. I think he's a heck of a pitcher. This is the dumb philosophy, which we hear a lot of front offices say. Maybe that's why they're not making a move, Dream. They're like, we got him in the second half. That's our trade deadline acquisition, which is not the worst acquisition to have.
I mean, I think he has legitimate number two upside. I felt this kind of way. And, you know, he's a guy that, like, if you go back to some of my tweets, it's like, why aren't we throwing the curve? Like, listen, I'm not smarter than Michael Elias. Like, I think he's one of the best, if not the best GMs in baseball. But I was a little curious what took him so long to start throwing more of his changeup and his curveball and his slider that, like, that's like where he gets a lot of his strikeouts from. So once he actually made that change and increased those usage, like, he's looking like a high-end, like a top-end pitcher. And another guy is Tyler Wells. That was incredible for them out of the bullpen. And then he was, like, solid as a starter as well. So I kind of hate the cliche of, like, oh, this is our big acquisition, second-half acquisition. No. But, like, it's not wrong. Like, no. These guys will give him a big boost.
Both are better than Trevor Rogers, folks. But yeah, the Tyler Wells thing, like there was a part of me last year going, man, this is your closer of the future. Like, what are we doing here? Because what he did the postseason before, like we talked about it on the show last year. I remember he was so good in the postseason coming out of the pen. I'm like, you don't need to worry about much right now. Like, Felix is hurt. Like, just roll with this. And they signed Kimbrel. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I felt your pain basically in that whole situation. All right. Now, we've been talking a lot of the show about the young talent of Baltimore and how most of the prospects are up. Are there any other prospects that we could maybe be looking forward to this year, or are we kind of a few years away from that since, again, most of them are up right now?
This is kind of a tough question, right? Like, I think they only had around two or three guys in people's top 100s, and it's just because they've graduated so many prospects. I'm sure, like I said, Elias will have another three guys in the top 100 again next year. Someone asked, I don't know if you heard this, someone asked Brandon Hyde kind of a I don't want to say a stupid question, but just not a question you hear all the time. He was like, hey, so ChatGTP has Samuel Basallo coming up at the summertime. And it's like, well, that's a weird thing to ask the manager. But I thought his response kind of gave us some good information. Hyde's response was basically like, well, then he must be really smoking the ball or like hitting the ball really well, which kind of tells me they're not necessarily planning for him to, I guess, come up or make an impact this year. Maybe it'll be like a September call up. So not much on the hitting side. I know we had Mayo last year. He really struggled. But again, you and I talked about, like, it doesn't take much for something to click with these guys. He's probably the guy that if I'm taking a flyer or I'm watching who's, you know, someone at the farm, it's probably him. And then there's a couple guys on the pitching side. Again, I don't know. You know, I'm mostly a bettor. I do think that doing fantasy helps my betting and just helps you kind of stay on top of things. Two minor league pitchers that we've kind of heard talked about, Chase McDermott and Brandon Young. And then obviously they have Povich as well. And again, like, dude,
I love Povich, man. It's ridiculous.
Like, please trade Kramer or one of those other guys. Yes. Put Povich in the five. Like, it makes so much sense. They have a bunch of guys that could put in at the back end of the bullpen. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see one of those three kind of take that job. But again, dude, there's like three or four guys in front of them that if they don't make a move, they're just kind of like a jam there.
Yeah, that's where I've been sitting on them. Like, when they signed Morton and Sagan, I'm like, you just needed one of those two. because now you're blocking Povich, you're blocking Albert Suarez, you're blocking these guys you have. So again, that's where maybe a trade comes into play. But usually if we're trading, we've said it, you're getting an ace, so you're still blocked in that regard in a roundabout way. You mentioned Bisalo, I think, is, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but like he tore up the fall league, the hype train was going through the roof. You know, if you want to keep talking Padres, they need catching bad. And you have Adley there. Adley should be your catcher for a long time. Like, let's just be real about this. So that's another angle you could throw towards San Diego.
I feel like he might be the guy that is a kind of, I don't want to say untouchable, but I think it would take, because like, listen, there's, people give Elias and Sig a hard time about being like prospect huggers and not necessarily, we saw a little bit with Houston, they don't want to necessarily give these guys away, not even if they're giving it away. Man, I don't know how this is going to play out, because if you look at them for like the future, I don't know if they're willing to pay both Gunner and Adley. And in my opinion, if you're going to pay one, like I'd pay Gunner and let Bisalo come up and do his thing. I know Morton caught Morton's bullpen for the first time a couple days ago, and Morton, like after the session, I was like, who is this guy? Like, I'd never heard of him, which is obviously fair for a guy that's young. And he just basically talked about like how he has good hands and doesn't even know like that his real strength comes on the offensive side. I think he might be the catcher of the future. And like, mm-hmm. as much as I hate to say it, like maybe they won't pay Adley.
That's fair. Like, that's kind of where it goes. This is almost like the Cubs a few years back. It's all of a sudden like you can't pay Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, Contreras. You can't pay them all. Like it's awesome. You like your GMs built this team, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't work in the end. Like you have to make those tough decisions, and the fans are going to hate it one way or another. It's just the reality of it. But they, in the end, as much as you and I and many hate it, this is a business. So they're going to have to make those decisions so you can keep building for the future. And that is a great point you made, is when it comes down to it, Bisalo might be the guy that needs to be there, because Adley might not be able to be there type question. So that's a very, very valid point. All right. Last question I have for you here then. What are your realistic expectations for this year? Are we talking postseason? Are we talking AL East, wild card? What are we thinking with the O's?
Man, it's kind of a cop-out, but I think you kind of nailed it with like the 85 to 90 wins. It's kind of where I group those other teams in the East. I definitely think they'll make the postseason. I really would like them to see a postseason victory. It's really depressing, and I know like they've come so far, and me watching them lose 100-plus games for, you know, a number of years consecutively, and now that we're complaining about losing in the postseason – but I do think that they could give – I mean, again, like, right, who knows what's going to happen if they get in the postseason. These are all pretty much toss-ups, and, like, it comes down to, like we talked about before the show, variance. It's going to come down to BABIP and how people hit it with runners in scoring position. I do think part of the reason why they moved the fence in was not only to give the right-handed hitters an advantage now that, like, you know, they're a different team than they were a few years ago. But also, if you looked at the last couple postseasons, it's a team like the Rangers. There's like, okay. And the Royals, like, they're just going to throw a lefty against us. The Orioles have more left-handed power. So not only that, but it also makes them hit it all. Like, they have to go to hit it over the Baltimore or whatever the fuck they called it. Which was like an easy way for teams to kind of, you know, nullify our offense. So they can't do that this year. So hopefully they score some more runs in the postseason, and actually I'll just be happy with a playoff win. Like, they don't have to win a series for me. I just want to see a single playoff victory, and I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah, I get it. And it's a dog eat dog AL East. So it'll come down to, like you said, health and variance and see where it goes. There's no reason any one of those, like we could make a case for all three of them winning the East. Like it's that simple. It's that tight. When all things come down to it. So be a good watch. And over here on the West Coast, that's how I start my evening. And I get to, it's always a nice appetizer before the West Coast puts people to bed over here, and the Dodgers just dominate the world. So we got that going for us. But as always, pleasure chatting with you. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you, what you got going on in FTN Fantasy.
Yeah, I'm over MLB Dream on Twitter. I'll probably be doing a bunch of free bets this year. Maybe not too much on the spring training side, but yeah, I'll just be grinding baseball away. I'm already starting to feel the nightly sweats that are going to be coming in. So.
Yep, it's glorious. I'm ready to do that. Like I've been telling people on my other shows, is I've done all like my best ball-y type drafting for the most part. I'm starting to change to real drafting, which means I'm getting closer to the season, which means DFS is around the corner. And that's for like your betting thing, my DFS. It's kind of our little world to enjoy. So I am so ready for that day-to-day ups and downs and, you know, whatever. But it's going to be awesome, my friend. So thanks for joining me. Remember, check him out on Twitter at MLB Dream, and awesome betting content and awesome stuff at FTN Fantasy as always. Until next time, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 739, your 2025 Baltimore Orioles team preview. Catch y'all later.